Does anybody remember that movie called The Big Chill? Yeah, some of you do. It's about a group of college friends who come back together for a funeral, and they end up staying for a house party over the weekend, kind of impromptu. And the title comes from a line in the movie when, during that cozy weekend reunion, one of the more realistic or cynical characters reminds his friends that it is a cold world out there. He says to them, "Wise up, folks. We're all alone out there, and tomorrow we're going to be out there again." That's not how I see the world, at least not most of the time. But I have to admit that in these days after Christmas, after the warmth and beauty and hope that I find in that season, it can feel like being back in a cold world. And I'm not talking about the weather, which is really cold. Let's just say that. If we're lucky, we get these moments in life when we glimpse beauty and wholeness. We have these mountaintop experiences from time to time. But most of the time, we're down in the valley, carrying on with our lives as best we can. And the challenge is to carry the hope and the promise that we have known with us, to lift up our little light and let it shine so we can bring some light and love to a world sorely in need of it. But you know, don't you, this is easier said than done. There is so much that could lead us to discouragement and despair. So how do you keep hope alive? I trust that being here for worship and the connections that you share here with one another, that this does help you to hold on to hope. Some of you have told me that. I know for myself that in addition to being part of a faith community, I need time outdoors, under the wide sky and in the presence of trees, which has been a little harder to get the last couple of weeks. I'm someone who needs beauty, whether I find that in watching the snow fall or waiting for a big yellow moon to rise, whether I find it in music or in silence. I need Sabbath time, and don't you too? Whatever your soul is longing for these days, I hope that you are listening to that longing and doing what you can to follow where it leads. I hope that you can trust that your longings are holy and that they will lead us, as Thomas Merton said, by the right road, though we may know nothing about it. It seems to me that the meaning of Christmas and the real test of Christmas is how well we carry its spirit with us into January, into February and beyond. There's a poem I'm thinking of these days, written by a man named Blaine Paxton Hall, called "Here's a Christmas Child for You." And it's written from the perspective of a teenager who lives in an orphanage, where church people come at Christmas time bringing gifts to drop off. But what the poet says he really wants for Christmas is for one of those families to invite him to spend a day with them in their home. Now, I will tell you, church people, what I would have wanted for Christmas. Would you bring me to your house for a home-cooked meal? Nothing fancy. Some hot, creamy, saucy food like mashed potatoes and gravy will do. Would you have me eat with your family? Just a normal meal with a typical family? I promise I'd behave. I'd be too intimidated by your abundance, too awed by your lightness of life. He goes on talking about how it can be hard for him and his friends in the orphanage to hope. And then the poem ends with these lines. And at the close of the evening, would you ask me for a photo of myself so that you could hold me in your heart, not just at Christmas time, but all the year around? This is what Christmas asks of us, to hold on to hope, to hold on to its call to help others, to keep our hearts open to them, not just at Christmas, but all the year around. Certainly, we do need to listen to our longings and find hope in those things that feed our souls. But central to what it means to be a person of faith is the prophet's call to do justice and love mercy and walk humbly. The call to serve those in need and build the common good. Isn't this what it's all about? When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the shepherds are back with their flock, when the kings and the princes are home, the work of Christmas begins, Howard Thurman reminds us. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoners, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among people, to make music in the heart. So how should we set about doing all this good work? Who's going to take on rebuilding the nations? Who wants to bind up the broken, and who will set about releasing the prisoners? Do y'all want to break in groups, or should we count off and form teams? As I said already, our worship theme for January is justice, and that theme seems just right for this season when we try to take the hope and the love that we have known and make it tangible in the world, giving life the shape of justice, as we just sang. But, and maybe this is just me, but does justice making sometimes seem like such a huge project that you find yourself wondering, what can I do to make a difference? Anybody else ever feel that way? Yeah. Systems of oppression seem so big and powerful and entrenched, don't they? But if you're paying attention, you also know there are cracks in those facades. We can see those cracks, and we get glimmers of light shining through them. I think the answer, rather than being daunted by the enormity of the task, I think the answer is to come down to earth and to find work closer to home, to seek out smaller, more manageable projects. And we're doing some of this here already. Feeding the hungry. I saw some of you downstairs in our kitchen yesterday afternoon getting ready to do that. We are good at feeding the hungry here already. Making music in the heart. We're doing some of that, right? Finding the lost, healing the broken, bringing peace among people. These things are possible, aren't they? How might we expand our ministries in these areas? What gifts do you have to offer? How are you going to serve the cause of justice here in this community and in your own lives? Bobby Kennedy said, "Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events." And he said, "It is from these numberless diverse acts of courage and belief that human history is shaped." Do we have this faith that our small acts can and will make a difference? And so I ask you, what do you want to set about working on? What do you want to change? I chose that reading from the Gospel according to Matthew this morning because of its call to come down to earth. It's a reminder that we will be judged not by how we treat those who are famous or rich or powerful, but how we treat those who have less, what Jesus called the least of these, those it could be easy to ignore or forget. Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." To do the work of justice is to use the power that we do have. It is to orient ourselves toward the lost and the broken. It is to understand that we are each other's keepers, that we are all family on this earth, that your liberation is tied up with your neighbor's liberation, that there is joy in letting down your guard and rolling up your sleeves, that this is what it means to be a person of faith. None of us can do everything, but is that fact going to keep us from doing what we can? Our calling is to give life the shape of justice, one small act at a time, one step at a time. To trust that our actions will make a difference, and to take heart that we are not alone, that there are others, there are so many others who are also looking toward and working toward building that land of freedom and justice, that land that we dream of, that land where we're bound. Where we're bound. Amen.